Live from Owings Mills, another Purple Report by WNST correspondent Luke Jones.
Eric DaCosta met with the media in Owings Mills as the Ravens turned their attention toward the start of the 2024 season.
Questions.
Eric, in paring down the roster down to 53, what were kind of some of the more difficult decisions that you feel you had to make to get down to 53?
Well, I mean, we're strong in the secondary, and, you know, we stayed strong. We kept some additional guys. We really like our corner group and our safety group. And, you know, it would have been more challenging, really, honestly, had Trayvon Mullen stayed healthy and then Arthur Millett, two really good players who got hurt. So, yeah, we're very strong there. And, you know, we had a few teams call us about a few of our players, and you know, my mentality is just if you're strong, stay strong. And, you know, some years we've traded players and then you get a couple injuries and you look at it and you kind of regret it. Now you're happy at draft time, but it makes for, you know, some challenges in season. So we just decided this year that we liked our team and we were going to stand put with the players that we had. We felt there was a chance we'd get some really good players to the practice squad, and we were fortunately able to do that.
Eric, with the rule that carried a third quarterback on your 52-man roster, they're going two quarterbacks. Is that sort of an issue you'll deal with if the issue comes up, or you know, what kind of plan you got in place for that?
Well, we have three QBs, so you know, heaven forbid we get an injury, and if that happens, then we'll have to adjust the roster. You know, if we get a long-term injury at quarterback, that was an interesting dynamic. The rule passed at the owners' meetings. And then we were notified, I believe, on July 11th that the NFLPA had not agreed to that rule change. So it's a little complicated, I think, especially for, you know, teams that potentially drafted a QB in the draft. You know, we didn't find out. We found out so late in the game. But in the end, we have three QBs. We just have one on the practice squad, and we have a mechanism for getting that player up if we need to get him up. So I guess the one scenario would be if both QBs got hurt in a game, and we've dealt with that. We've dealt with that for years up until last year. So we'll be ready to go regardless.
So Eric, you're happy at your quarterback situation? I think there was a former Raven quarterback who was released earlier today, but you think you're pretty good with what you have there?
Well, we have an MVP. So I think we're pretty happy there. With Josh, we have a really experienced guy. He's like having another coach, you know. He's great with Lamar. The players love him. He's highly respected. He's a talented player. So we love Josh. And with Devin, we have a young player. And he had his moments. And there's certainly, as we've seen with quarterbacks, a lot of things that he can improve on and get better at. And we believe he will. But, yeah, we like the room. It doesn't mean that we won't add another guy, which we could do at some point. You know, it's like any position on the team. We'll continue to evaluate and look at players that become available and make decisions based off of that.
Eric, with the offensive line, a lot of turnover this offseason. I'm sure it was a big point of emphasis for you guys this offseason. How do you feel about them now compared to going into the offseason?
Well, I mean, I think there's a little bit of an unknown just because we haven't played as a unit in games. We've seen them in practice. You know, Tyler, getting hurt early on in camp probably wasn't ideal. We're very excited to get him back. But, you know, not having a Pro Bowl center out there, that's kind of the guy that drives the car in a lot of ways on the offensive line. He's the guy that typically will adjust the line and works hand-in-hand with the quarterback on things like protections and stuff. Very important position, and we're blessed to have one of the best guys in the league. You know, I think across the board, we made the decision to start to build up the offensive line with young players. And that was unfortunately, with a salary cap league, you know, you just can't build a team with veterans at every position. If you could, it'd be great. You know, it'd be, you know, I always tell people, I grew up a Cowboys fan, and the 1993 Dallas Cowboys, it was one of the great teams of all time. That period with the Cowboys, and if that team had been able to stay together forever, they'd have won Super Bowls every year, I think. But there is a salary cap, and there is free agency and things. And so you have to pay players, but you also understand you've got to draft and you've got to develop young players as well. And we have started to do that on the offensive line. excited about Roger, excited about Voorhees, Andrew, excited for the future. You know, we may have a couple of hiccups across along the way, but I think we've started to build from the bottom up, and I think a year from now we'll be in a great place.
Did you know going into the offseason that that would be the plan with that group, or if the right value had come up with a veteran, might you have adjusted?
It's hard because, again, we went into this year knowing that when you pay your quarterback, your MVP quarterback, and make him the highest paid, you pay basically the heart of your defense, Roquan, make him the highest paid linebacker. You pay arguably one of the top three defensive tackles in football last year, Justin Matabike. You realize you're going to have to make some changes in the way that you do business. And that's going to affect us. It's affecting other teams. I could give you 10 different teams that are all dealing with that exact same phenomenon, and you see it. So it's just one of the realities of this business. I can think of multiple teams right now that are struggling with this dynamic and are going to have to probably make major, massive changes in the next coming years. And so we're aware of that. You just simply can't pay everybody. And so we made the decision that we were going to go young on the offensive line as best as we could, develop our guys. We've had a lot of success developing offensive linemen in the past. I give you a bunch of players that we took in the draft or even got, off the streets, and those guys became good players for us.
When you were constructing this offensive line, how did having a guy like Patrick Kupari affect the way that you look at it?
Well, Patrick's great. He can play multiple spots. I mean, he's played probably all five spots on the offensive line. So having that, flexible chess piece, I think, really helps us on game days especially. It's great. He's like having an elite six-man in basketball. Kevin McHale, when I was a Celtics fan back in the 80s, who was a six-man at one point. Patrick's kind of like that. He can play all five spots and plays them well.
Eric, you're no stranger to trades you made many times over the years. Do you feel like you have the flexibility if there's a player that you want at some point this season to pull off a trade?
Well, we don't right now because I think we're probably over the cap when you factor in practice squads and things like that. But at some point we will have to make some moves in the coming days and weeks. And we've been planning for all that, So there's a lot of things we'll be able to do. We will be cap compliant, and we will have at least some money to spend if a player is available that we think will help us be the best team we can be.
Eric, you've been watching the preseason for a while now. How much value do you get out of watching these games? And do you think we're closer to ending it all and just going to 17 games altogether, or 18 games, rather?
Oh, I don't know, Jerry. I don't have an opinion on that. But I do think that for us, looking at the practice, looking at the preseason games is really about looking at the lower-end roster players and the undrafted free agents and guys like that and getting a chance to evaluate those guys. We know we're not going to have a chance to look at really the starters and to get much of a feel. It's not like the old days when guys played in the first couple preseason games. But it's still a great opportunity for us to evaluate the talent on the back end of rosters, to look at those players that we may not know a lot about, to assess those players, to help us, find a couple guys here and there. I think our pro department, led by George Kokinas and Mark Acevedo, do as good a job as anybody in the NFL. And I think that's proven every single year. They find players at all different levels of football, and we'll have a chance to, at some point, probably churn our practice squad and find some guys that we think are better than what we have, and those guys will probably help us win some football games.
Eric, another undrafted player making a team with Beau Grade. Is that a specific pride you guys take in finding, again, that undrafted player to get to the 53?
Someone said maybe we had 20 out of 21 years we had a guy make it. That's not necessarily like a streak that we're trying to address. Even that 1 year, I don't know who it was. Had I been aware of that streak, I probably would have kept a guy just to keep the streak going. So I really didn't know about that streak. But in this year, I just think with Bo, that guy just really earned it. And if you looked at our games, the Packers game, let's face it, it was kind of a joke. It was hard to watch in a lot of ways. I couldn't wait for the game to be over. Really just, to get the Popeye's chicken sandwich on the plane. But the reality is, like, Bo actually just played great, and he did it consistently. He won the job. He took the job. And in the end, he deserved to be on the team, and that's what it was all about. Well, I think I answered that, but we have some flexibility to make some moves, and we will in the next probably week be cap compliant. There's a lot of different things we can do. We've been pretty conservative, and I'm blessed to have Nick Mattio, who's a great salary cap guy, and Pat Moriarty, who's kind of like the consigliere of salary cap guys. So we're in good shape upstairs, and we'll have a good plan.
Eric, where do you feel like where you are at edge rusher, and specifically with David Ajabo and Tavius Robinson?
Yeah, I think both those guys really kind of made a jump this year. I mean, David has really been snake bitten by injuries. He's worked extremely hard. I mean, you guys know coming back from an ACL tear is challenging, and this is a guy that did that and started practicing probably in 8 months, which is pretty remarkable. He is showing me that he has got his quickness back and his twitch and his suddenness. He's playing with heavy hands, and I'm very excited about what he's going to bring to the team this year. And then Tavius is a guy that is just keeps getting better. I mean, he plays with a passion. He's very, very physical, stout, edge setter. He plays with a relentless energy about him. You know, and I think his best football is on the come, and he's going to be one of these guys that probably a year from now, 2 years from now, we're going to say it was one of our better fourth-round picks.
Eric, along those lines, I don't think we asked you yet about Adafe and the decision to pick up that fifth-year option. I guess, what have you seen to give him a pretty significant chunk of money for 2025?
Well, I'm glad I did, from what I've seen. You know, we were kind of betting on the come with him. He's a guy last year, you know, everybody wants to kind of evaluate a player based on just his sack production, which, you know, I get that. That's what we do as fans, but this is a guy that impacts games and played well last year, and we felt like he was going to make another jump, and we've seen it in training camp. We've seen him every day. You guys are out there. You've seen the energy that he plays with, his ability to disrupt and make things happen. And, you know, it's never easy when you're talking about a fifth-year option. That's why you see so many fifth-year options not get picked up around the league. I mean, it's kind of surprising when you think about it. We do this for a living, and yet we draft these guys, and then we don't pick up their fifth-year option almost probably half the time, I'm guessing, without any – I don't know the stats on that. But with Odafe, we just felt like this was a guy that has all the tools. He plays hard. He's got a great energy about him. He wants to be good. He's got all the talent to be one of the better guys at his position, and we just decided to make a bet on him that he was going to do it, and so far I feel really good about it. It's just really an opportunity, you know, for him to show what he can do consistently. I think a big part of that is him staying on the field, playing, catching the ball. He runs great routes. He's tough. He wants to be good. He has the talent to do it, and he needs the opportunities. But half of that is really getting the opportunities. The other half of that is staying healthy and being the best he can be. But I am very bullish on Rashad. I've said that repeatedly. It was a no-brainer for us to extend him, to give him the chance to be what we all know he's going to become. He is a great kid, an awesome guy. I love having him here in the building. He's got a great opportunity, and I believe he's going to show the fans this year what he can be.
What do you like about the roster that you constructed?
We got a lot of guys that love the game. They play hard, relentless. The camaraderie is great. The culture is awesome. These guys really get along well together. And we have a lot of really good young players. And we're going to have more challenges because looking out, you know, in the next couple of years, starting after this season, we're going to have some really, really good players that we can extend. And it's going to be challenging, but we're going to try to do it because we're going to try to keep. I think I said this back in 2019. We're going to try to keep as much of our young talent here in Baltimore as we can. We can't do it all the time, but that's a mission that we have. And I love that we have so many good young players. And, you know, they just keep emerging, and we keep seeing these guys develop in our training staff and our strength and conditioning staff and our coaches. Just they do a great job taking young players and helping them be the very best that they can be. And it's great in one way, but in the other way, it's hard because we can't keep every single player, but we're going to try to keep as many guys as we can. And so I think our future is very bright.
Maybe this is somebody I want to have those contract negotiations with this year.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon had as good a year last year as anybody on the team. And I love his attitude. Love how he just takes care of his business as a player. And I think he's going to make another jump this year. So, again, you know, he's a guy that, you know, we certainly want to keep him here long term. It's not without challenge. He plays a position where the best players are highly compensated. But we'll do our best. And I admire so many things about Brandon. This guy has had some adversity. He's overcome so many different things, position changes, transfers, and all these things. And he's made himself one of the best corners in the NFL. So,
Eric, one of the guys that you probably will want to extend, you know, when time comes, Kyle Hamilton. Do you ever think back to that draft and wonder, like, how did this guy still fall to you guys?
You know, I credit Ozzy because it happened to him so many times. We're just the best player fell to him, and it happened to me. So I'm blessed to have been around Ozzy and sat next to him, and maybe some of that magic kind of fell off on us that year, and we were able to get who I consider to be one of the best players in that draft class.
Eric, along those lines, Hamilton, Stevens, very versatile. John and the coaches all talk about the versatility, flexibility of the roster. Is that something you guys are seeing in the college game and you're emphasizing to the scouts? How you're developing the players when they get here. Man, every coach talks about it.
Well, I think versatility is a skill. You know, it's a trait that we look for as scouts. So when we see a guy that can do multiple things or be used in multiple ways, they get graded for that. They get graded up for that. And so, you know, if you have an offensive lineman who can play multiple spots, you have a DB who can play safety or corner or play on the nickel, or you have a receiver who can return kicks or do different things or be a gunner, you get extra credit almost. It makes it easier for the club because we can account for game day and we can account for the roster and the 48 players and all those different things. It's really peace of mind when you know you have a guy who can do multiple things to get you out of a game. Or you can create packages where a guy's moving around quite a bit and keeping the offense or the defense kind of on their heels because they're not really sure how that guy's going to be used. So it makes you more multiple, and it makes it more confusing for the other side of the ball. All that kind of factors in. But I would say I think one of the things that our scouts have to do is really assess the player's versatility to do multiple things. And the most versatile players end up being players that get moved up the board a little bit. Well, he looks fast as heck. You know, he looks really, really fast. He's throwing the ball extremely well. What I've noticed about Lamar really is more of an intangible thing, his urgency as a leader, his urgency with the other players. He's just really in tune with the other players. Every single day in practice, he's so engaged with the coaches. He's engaged with his teammates. You know, heck, he's engaged with me. We talk personnel. We meet after practice just the other day talking about personnel. He's got some great ideas and suggestions, and he just really wants to win badly. And I think I'm seeing that. Like, as a player, I've always known that, but now I'm seeing his personality kind of come out more where I can really get a sense that this guy is so hyper-focused on this season and really, you know, working to get a ring. I mean, we would always talk about players and stuff. But, you know, I think just Lamar sees – I mean, I don't want to speak for Lamar, but I think we all see an opportunity for us to be a good team this year. And we want to do it this year. And that's just – there's so many different layers to that. It's what have we done in the off season? What are we doing in training camp? How can we be the best team on Sundays? You know, are there players out there that might help us? Where are we strong? Where are we weak? What can we improve on? There's just so many different things. But again, like I feel an urgency with Lamar. I mean, it's great. I love it. You know, that's how I am. And so I really appreciate that quality in others. And just the urge to get better and to daily just improve on things. That's how you win as a team.
Yeah, can I say it likely? Do you envision him being sort of a breakout player this year? Sort of, he's a guy who can get downfield and also has good hands and tight end and a great training camp. What do you see from him this year?
Well, I love Zay. I mean, he's a playmaker. He's got, you know, route running ability. He's similar to a receiver in some ways. Strong after the catch. You know, I mean, that's something that going back to college when I evaluated him, it's the one thing you really kind of hung your hat on. This guy was dangerous with the football in his hands. He's another guy, like, I've seen an urgency this year with him. His leadership, interaction with other players, you know, he's kind of changed from being a young player to being from being a rookie to being a vet. And I just feel like he and Mark Andrews will be the best tandem at their position in the league and really create a lot of problems for opposing defensive coordinators.
The passing of Joe D, obviously, that's a huge blow off the field. But even football-wise, to lose a coach with that status and bring everything he brings to the table right before the season, what does that do for this team?
You know, it's just a hard one. I mean, Joe is just a great friend of mine. You know, if you've seen practice, you know, I always stand behind, usually next to Joe, and we talk about, you know, football and just life and things. And his ability with the younger players was a special thing, watching him develop these guys. And, you know, he could push, but he could love. And that's what makes a great coach, great teacher. Think about the great teachers we've all had, right? The best teachers will push you, but they could also love you up, too, when you were struggling. And that's Joe D. It's a tough one, you know, it's a tough one. It's a tough one for all of us here. That's what I have to say on that.
Eric, have you had conversations with the coaches, the fact that this season your 15 practice squad players will be seen throughout the league doing hard knocks, and there's a possibility of many of them maybe taking off that list there. Have you guys had conversations with the fact that that may happen?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, we evaluate the practice squad guys. We don't use HBO to evaluate them. We watch the tape. I mean, so we're gonna know the players, and you know, we'll know everybody else's players too. And so, you know, we'll get a guy post once or twice a year. We'll poach a couple guys, but in the end, I think teams are really comfortable with their own players. You know, it's gonna be an interesting dynamic with Hard Knocks, and I'm not exactly sure what that's gonna be. I don't know how much focus will be on the practice squad guys. If it's up to me, there won't be much. But I don't see it as a major hindrance for us in terms of keeping our players.
Eric, sometimes you hear fans say, this team can't prove anything else to me during the regular season. It's all about what happens in January. You know, what do they do at the end?
Mm-hmm.
How do you kind of balance that urgency to win the Super Bowl with knowing all the steps you have to go through to even have that chance?
Yeah, you know, it's an excellent question. I mean, I would say, I was thinking about this the other day, like if I had to just rank some of the best Ravens teams, you know, you'd put 2000 on there, but it was a one-sided team, right? And then you go 2006, that was a hell of a team. You know, 2011 was a great team, one of the best. 2019, 2023, those are like really strong teams. The 2012 team, we got hot late, you know. There's a lot of factors that really go into a team winning the Super Bowl. And in the end, and I know this because I'm at the Senior Bowl every single year, there's only one team that ends up being happy. There's a lot that goes into that. So my goal is to build a team that has talent at every position, that is flexible enough to withstand injuries, that we have depth to get us through a long season and to make the playoffs and to be sort of ascending at that point. It's really hard to project what's going to happen. And it's mentally challenging too for me. You know, it is tough. You know, I think we've been maybe had the best record twice in the last 6 years, 5 years. And we didn't make it to the end. That's tough. But I am proud of our team, what we've accomplished. We haven't accomplished our ultimate goal, but I don't really subscribe to the idea that your season's a failure if you don't win the Super Bowl. I know a lot of people do. If I did that, I'd probably be in a mental institution. So I don't feel that way. I measure the success of a season in a lot of different things, Super Bowl being one of those things, but certainly not the only criteria that I would use to judge a season.
We can do two more.
You talked last year, maybe you talked about how the Lamar Jackson contract was going to change how you could build the roster in the future. Thinking of Brandon Stevens, some of the other players, how is your approach to kind of in-season negotiating? Has it changed in terms of trying to negotiate with some of these extensions in-season? Does that strategy change since the Jackson contract to now?
I don't know that it changes that. I think it's just right player, right price. You know, I mean, you got to negotiate a contract that works for you and works for the player. And sometimes you're under parameters that might make it more challenging. You just simply just can't afford to have the highest paid players across the board at their position. You know, you can have some. But I think if you study the league, you're seeing the impact that it has on rosters and what that means. Whether that's holdouts or players getting terminated, quality players getting terminated, it's just, you just fundamentally, financially, you can't do it. You can't have 10 players making $20 million a year. You just can't do it on a $258 million salary cap. So you have to look at it and have a strategy, and every team operates with a different strategy, how they pay players, what's important to them. We try to be balanced across the board, and we try to pay our best players as much as we can, understanding that sometimes we just can't keep every single player. If we could, the roster would be different, but it's not. We understand that it is challenging sometimes to let really good players leave, but that's the business we're in.
At quarterbacks specifically, like, it was pretty obvious that, you know, given Lamar's accomplishments and talent, he was going to reset the quarterback market at the very top. Across the board, it seems like every time a quarterback gets a second contract, they're like the highest paid player ever all of a sudden. Do you think that's going to continue to be a reality across the league as you, you know, kind of look in the future and at the landscape? Or at some point, is that going to bounce back and teams are going to say, we can't afford to keep doing this but if it's not an MVP kind of guy?
Well, we paid Lamar. We made Lamar the highest paid quarterback because we felt he was the best quarterback in the league. He won an MVP, now two MVPs. And I'm blessed. We're very happy that we did that. Generally speaking, I don't necessarily subscribe to the theory that every time you do a negotiation with a quality player, they need to be the highest paid player at their position. And I think in a lot of cases we haven't done that. It's challenging at times. There isn't typically an expectation when you negotiate with agents that they want the market to work that way. I think it's up to the club. It's up to the individual club. The hard part is that when a deal is done, good or bad, that goes into the library of deals that get done, and it's used, good or bad, by clubs and by agents. We try to be responsible with our deals. We try to be respectful of the player's position. But we're going to pay the players what we can't afford to pay the players. We're going to spend most of our money every single year. We're going to be over the cap, cash over cap, most years. Now, there's always going to be a day of reckoning. You can't be cash over cap every single year. There's going to have to be a purge at some point. So we understand that. But, you know, I've seen these contracts. Every club has to operate the way they want to operate. You know, we operate the way we're going to operate. And we look out and we know we have a lot of really good players to pay. And every dollar that we can save on a contract is a dollar that we can use on a really another really good player. And that's my theory.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, guys.